This is the Android Buffet Podcast, episode number 449, recorded Wednesday, July 10th, 2019, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. This is Zoom experiment number 2. So in last week's Zoom experiment, as you might remember, I only used the recording that Zoom itself made. And that is what I put out with some minor editing modifications. This week, Zoom has taken the place of the previous Hangouts. So I'm using the original recording setup, but just a different medium for getting you.
No more Hangouts.
No more Hangouts. But again, I think that we're going to have to do a few different experiments. So the recording with Zoom, nobody actually commented on whether or not they were happy with it. And that was just using Zoom's recording of a single feed and a minimum of editing. So if that works, that's fine. That's a lot less equipment. Now, this, I'm recording two different tracks. You are being recorded directly from the Chromebook that I was using for the Hangout setup and the Zoom Chrome client. And my audio is coming in directly into the computer. But again, the problem was that was the setup that some people were having trouble with, where they said that my voice would have issues and occasionally there'd be a speed up or a slowdown of the recording.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, the extra part that I can do is I can go invest in a digital recorder and have it record the output from everything. So, again, experimentation time. I'm going to keep iterating on this until I find the combination I'm looking for. So, did you have a nice July 4th?
Yes.
Was there barbecuing and traditional July 4th-y things?
Yes, there was a grill with meat on it, and there were colorful and very high-up explosions.
Oh, I missed the high-up explosions. I heard them. It sounded like somebody was trying to set off fireworks outside. I did find a bunch of them by my car. So apparently some neighborhood individuals were trying to set fire to my car. Or were trying to set fire to something near my car. But anyway, tried to relax over the weekend, came back, you know, back in the thick of things. And we got a letter.
Oh! We got a letter.
Yeah, it's from Jim. Remember Jim?
Jim.
Yes.
Jim.
Yeah, you're the one who did the dramatic reading of Jim's last letter, so I'm going to ask you to reprise your role as Jim.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Okay, so here we go.
Are you ready? Do you need me to help you with your motivation?
No.
Okay, because I've already figured out the character of Jim.
Why?
Because I'm
Jim
a method,
has a character.
Because I'm a method actor. You have to get into the head of your subject.
I don't.
So Jim Maybe is somebody with a burning desire to get his question answered. And that should come across in your reading.
Okay,
let her rip.
Guru's mention of his use of Nextcloud caught my attention. I'm looking for something that could replace Dropbox for syncing a few files between my Android phone and the various Linux systems at home and, bonus if possible, web access from work. Dropbox's new fee structure is a bit steep for someone that just wants to sync a few files between more machines than they permit under their free plan. Dropbox is blocked by my employer anyway, so a self-hosted solution may work as it is low profile and would not attract my employer's attention as quickly as Dropbox's high-profile commercial solution did. More description of Guru setup would be appreciated. Self-hosted? Using a cloud service? Lessons learned? Recommendations? Thank you for your entertaining and useful efforts. Jim.
I think that that was the best dramatic reading I've heard all day.
And how many dramatic readings have you heard today?
Counting yours?
Yeah.
One.
Then it was the best you've heard all day.
Yes.
And don't you forget it.
The fact that I only heard one does not minimize its great dramaticness. Anyway. So the question was about Nextcloud. And Jerry, before I go into my answer, do you have an opinion on Nextcloud?
I don't have an opinion on Nextcloud, but I do have an opinion about the whole self-hosting thing.
Okay, I know that you happen to like self-hosting.
I do. And I have recently gotten into a product called Unraid.
Yeah,
and while it is not free, it is reasonably priced, and it's really nice. I like it. I approve of it. That's all I had to say. I am done with the saying of things.
Okay. So let's start with Nextcloud. So Nextcloud, some people would say that it is a Dropbox clone. It does do more than that. It does allow the installation of some moderate apps. So I do a self-hosted version of it. So in the various choices I had for self-hosting, I could have hosted it on the VPS that I have, but I'm actually hosting it inside my house. So it is running on the same Nook that my home automation software is running on, since neither of them require very much processing power. And what that is, let's see, it is a Intel Nook running Home Assistant and Nextcloud, and then running a Nginx proxy server. And what that does is it proxies everything out onto the public web in an isolated manner. So there's no direct contact with the actual servers. So that's more of a security measure than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, both of them, again, happen to be protected by SSL certificates provided by Let's Encrypt. And the data storage is not on the Nook, because the Nook doesn't have very much data storage. That's on my NAS. So my NAS mounts a mount point for the Nextcloud storage directory, which gives me the redundancy of NAS. Now, I've done this in the past by having everything together when I had my own homebrew network attack storage, which was just me putting the same thing into a larger computer with multiple hard drives. But I sort of like the convenience of somebody else handling that for me.
And you seem to like the whole process of small devices doing the work instead of a single large device.
I've gone back and forth about it over the years, to be honest. I started out having like a large tower-sized computer doing my server work, but I've switched to smaller distributed devices. So just looking at what I have here, and I change it every so often. I have two computers and a NAS sitting here. So one computer is the Nook, which runs the home automation and the Nextcloud instance. And that's all it does. So there's more than enough power on an old Intel Nook to do that. And this is an old Celeron Nook. Next to that is a much more powerful computer that runs the DVR setup. So that's Myth TV. It has its own computer, and it doubles as a Plex server. So I wanted to keep the video processing stuff separate from core house functionality.
All right. Well, I would like to bring up that I checked So Unraid has this concept of apps that you can install on your server, which are
Yeah.
basically just Dockers. And they do have a Nextcloud Docker already designed and set up for Unraid. So there's that.
Yeah, and there are other things. Docker is not a bad way to sort of have containerized applications. It's somewhat overbuilt when you only have two applications running.
Yes, but it's amazing how easy it is to find other things to run on it. Like,
Yeah.
as an example, I'm running Caddy, which is kind of like a reverse proxy. I'm running Plex, Medusa, KubeTorrent, and Mayan EDMS, and a separate Docker which holds the Postgres database for Mayan.
And I have on there because I need that same Nook does have a MySQL database running. And the MySQL database is receiving the data from my weather installation. And all that is being backed up to the NAS, which is supposed to do a secondary backup to Amazon S3, but that's currently down. I have to fix that.
Alrighty.
Well, there's only so much storage you can afford at Amazon S3. They charge a lot of money.
Don't forget that you can set reduced redundancy to reduce the rate, and you can also, if you don't expect to need the files quickly, you can
Glacier.
move them to Glacier.
Yeah, but for the amount of files that I have there, I might be better off syncing the NAS to, let's say, Google Drive. Their price per terabyte is not that bad. And I don't have a large amount of data that I need. I just need to make sure that my configuration files. I've sort of gotten to the conclusion that my music collection might be lost in the event of an emergency. That and my videos, my ripped videos, probably are not worth backing up to Amazon. So I have a secondary solution of putting a hard drive at my parents' house. Their place in Florida
Yep.
I've mentioned I go to. So I'll do.
Remember, I mean, the cloud is just somebody else's computer.
Yeah,
It
so
doesn't have to
there,
be a computer owned by some large company.
my plan was to just bring something down and leave it there. Because it's not like I'm updating my video collection on a regular basis. Significantly so. Anyway, moving along from that, that's my distributed network here, and I do have a couple of purpose-based PIs, which I've mentioned. One that runs the weather station, but I do not trust any data storage on a PI, so that comes down to the Nook, which is using a solid-state drive. I think I mentioned when we were talking about the Pi 4 how much I seriously dislike the storage on PIs as being unreliable.
Yeah.
So that's that. Let's see. Other than that, Nextcloud again does the standard file syncing you'd expect from something like Dropbox, but it also allows for some very useful apps. So they have a talk functionality where if you wanted to set up an instant messaging program between people, they have one and there is an Android app for that. I have never tested that for the simple reason that there's only one user on my installation of Nextcloud, me.
Yep.
They have a, it's a gallery. They have a contact syncing, a calendar app, a note taker, bookmark, phone sync. I've been meaning to try out phone sync as a way of backing up messages on my phone, but I have not gotten to that. And one of the things on my list has been considering using the Nextcloud calendar instead of Google Calendar.
Really?
Why not?
I don't see a
Nothing wrong with
reason.
Google Calendar, but I like having things under my control.
I understand.
I also have the contacts in my phone actually sync to Nextcloud also using a backup program.
Oh, that's neat.
So at some point, I may move my contacts completely out of my Google account into the Nextcloud account, and they can still be synced to the phone using an app called DavDroid, which does card dev, which is a standard for that. So there's this whole thing about self-hosting, which is something that I know you like, because you're the one who told me I should check out the Reddit self-hosting. The subreddit.
So lots of cool stuff on there.
Yeah, so that's a good place if you want to read about people trying to replace third-party systems with self-hosted solutions. And I don't self-host everything. There are some things, and this is a conversation I've had with other people, the balance between I want to host everything myself and do everything myself, and I want to pay other people because I can't be bothered and I don't have the patience to do this, even though I'm capable.
There is a fine line between, you know, sometimes it's not that you can't be bothered. It's just you've got more valuable things that you could do with your time.
Yeah. With Nextcloud, the maintenance cost on that is very minimal.
Sure.
So I'm fine with it. Now, it's mostly for file syncing, but I also have the Nextcloud app for Android doing instant upload of photos that are taken with my phone.
Wow, neat.
Which Dropbox was a feature I did with Dropbox because I wanted to make sure that I had redundancy on photos I took. So I do have Google Photos doing a backup, but Google Photos, if you remember, if you don't give them money, down-reses the pictures. So the originals go to Nextcloud, and then periodically I back them up off of, since they don't need to be in active storage, I take them off of the Nextcloud instance and move them to long-term photo storage. Although I am considering changing that approach on the basis that I have a lot more space on the server than I did on Dropbox when I used to do it. But all of this is a decision about how much space you want to allocate. And remember, all those files get copied to every single computer that you have Nextcloud installed on. So do you want your pictures copied to every computer and your music? You probably do, except for one problem. Storage.
Sometimes it's
storage space and bandwidth.
Yeah.
But I have enough
especially storage space.
Yeah. But I have enough room if I wanted to sync my music over Nextcloud. I have enough room on pretty much every laptop I have to store my music collection. In theory. And you can also go into the configuration of the client and exclude specific directories from being synced to that computer. So there are, again, options. And I keep saying I have to sit down and rethink my approach, and I do that every so often and decide I'm going to change this or that. So that's my setup there. Since I'm talking about my setup before we launch into some news stories, I'm also upgrading my Home Assistant setup, which is on that same system.
Really? Tell me about it.
Well, it's not an upgrade in the conventional sense. Home Assistant keeps moving things from being configured using YAML files. So YAML is a markup language that Home Assistant uses for configuration. It's a specific formatting of the configuration file. But they're moving it into being configured using their graphical interface. So they're backwards compatible to still supporting being configured in the files. But what I want to do is anything that now can be supported in the GUI, I want to take away the manual configuration and move to their self configuration so that I don't necessarily have to restart my instance to get things changed. So as they migrate to dynamic configuration, I'll start shutting down my manual configuration. So I started with that. The big thing that's going to take a little while, MQTT, which I've mentioned, which is the message broker that a lot of my switches use to send to Home Assistant, supports discovery.
Yes.
Especially on the Sonoff devices that I use. But I've never turned it on. I've always manually configured my devices. So some of them have to be manually configured, but I want to remove all of the ones that don't need to be manually configured that can be configured through auto discovery over to auto discovery. So that'll make my configuration files even smaller.
That'll be nice.
Yeah, so my configuration files could be limited to very specific integrations. So a lot of interesting potential there. And again, this is all clerical. It doesn't add any additional functionality. It just makes it easier for me to administrate, especially when new features come in. And I have some new automation scheduled, mostly around location, which has always been a challenge for me.
Yes.
And this goes back to that whole self-hosting thing. This is all maintenance tax. What you have to pay in order, in terms of time, in order to maintain these systems yourself. So that's your balance. You could just as easily go and pay somebody, and there are paid Nextcloud instances where you can get somebody else to host it for you. I wouldn't necessarily recommend or not recommend one, as I haven't done serious research into who I might pay to do that. I like self-hosting certain things, and if anybody does have a recommended Nextcloud paid provider, please suggest it, and I'll certainly distribute it to everyone. But I like the idea of self-hosting, even if I'm paying somebody else to run the server. For example, I do have my server at Linode that hosts Android Buffet.
Yes.
And while I do the maintenance on the server, the actual physical infrastructure is handled by Linode. So that is that story. So we have a few Android and other news-related items.
Yay!
There's an interesting thing from Android developers on capturing audio in Android.
And specifically allowing or disallowing other applications from... I didn't realize this. But your application, can say who can record the audio that your application generates. Which is kind of cool. I didn't realize that.
And if you look at it, this is a new API in Android Q. So right now, no. So it's not your current version of Android. It is the future version of Android that will support this. So this is the audio playback capture API. So in order to determine whether your audio can be captured by default, if you are using an older version of the API, the app needs to explicitly opt in. And for newer ones, there are different usage types and permissions. So there are changes that have to be made for older apps. Anyway, there was a Android Q&A about Android Q. It was conducted by Ars Technica with the Android engineering team.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to hear some interesting technical discussions of Android Q and related matters, it's a very good article read, and I have it in the show notes. So this includes discussions of Project Mainline, which is trying to make it so that updates come faster with modularization. So several core system components will be moved to the Play Store as part of this.
Which is really super cool.
Yeah, well, again, if you can update something without having to worry about approval from the carriers, which always seems to slow things down, or the manufacturers, why not? So this would be for new devices, things like captive portal login, DNS resolvers, media codecs, media framework components, time zone data, etc.
It's kind of interesting when you think about that the part of your phone that is responsible for getting an IP address from a host name is something that you could update.
Yeah.
But it totally should be.
Yeah, so as much as possible, modularized so that those parts can be updated without affecting other parts that require, let's say, if you're on the Verizon network, for example, you need that Verizon-specific software. Or something that involves how to connect to LTE and is specific to the drivers for the chip in your phone that connects to cellular. That stuff may be a lot harder to update.
Yeah.
So you'd be able
that's
to.
probably largely in the Broadcom and
Yeah.
Qualcomm range
But
too,
again, this is for the operating system itself.
which is cool.
So just remember, to use my computer as an example, I can get a driver update for a computer and not necessarily have to update the entire operating system and vice versa. I could update the operating system and still use the older driver, in theory. So it's just making it so that the pieces do not require all pieces to be updated in order for everything to work.
Yep, true.
So it's worth reading the article if you have some time. Moving along, there is a study that over 1,000 Android apps access user data without proper permissions.
What?
So
Tell me
this
it ain't
article comes from
so.
XDA developers. So the researchers that were mentioned here apparently presented this at PrivacyCon. I didn't know there was a PrivacyCon. It doesn't surprise me. I just didn't know it.
Well, they're really private about it.
That would make sense. How'd we find out about it then?
Apparently somebody failed.
They failed to be private.
Yep. They leaked it. They leaked the private information.
So, what they said in this research was that they've tried to do a whole variety of things. So, channels involved, let's see, two services cooperating to send data from one service that has valid access to one that does not. So, an app that has been granted location access can share that data with an app that has not. So, an analysis of apparently 88,113 popular apps, they discovered 1,000 apps in third-party libraries that employ side channels or covert channels to circumvent security measures so they can access location data and persistent identifiers of user devices.
Yes, let's be clear. This is not, oops, I did it wrong. This is active coding in order to get around security measures that your phone has in place.
Yeah, so they discovered a few things that they were able to that the various SDKs were using a covert channel to read the IMEI. Apps with legitimate access were storing hidden files on external storage containing the IMEI, so other apps without legitimate access could read it. By the way, this includes apps that are using the Baidu SDK, including Disney's theme park apps for Hong Kong and Shanghai. And the Samsung Health and Samsung browser apps. The network MAC address
Wow.
apparently is protected by a permission. However, apps were using C++ native code to invoke a number of unguarded Unix system calls. And that 748 of the 12,000 apps containing the code in question were lacking the ACK6 network state permission. The access Wi-Fi state permission protects the BSSID of the router, but reading the ARP cache allows an app to obtain that data without needing any permissions. Apparently, the OpenX SDK used that side channel. The Shutterfly app was accessing location tags of photos' EXIF metadata in order to figure out location. That one, at least, isn't Shutterfly a photo app?
Yes.
So that one's at least a little less. The other ones,
Nefarious.
well, again, you're looking at photos, and a common use is looking at photos and showing where those photos were taken. That's a
I'll buy
little,
that.
I'm just going to say that's a little, it's still on the edge, but it's a little less nefarious than some of the other ones where they're going and looking around for unique information they don't need. Now, I don't know if Shutterfly is actually using this information to, for the user's benefit. Which is always the question. In Android Q, Google now requires that apps have the read privileged phone state to read the IMEI. They transmit randomized MAC addresses by default, and of course, the annoying scope storage situation. So we'll see if this inspires Google to try some different approaches to securing things, but remember that security also means annoyance for users, regrettably.
Most often, yes.
So, apparently, the new Your Phone app from Microsoft does full notification mirroring. So, if you are a Windows user, doesn't help me. Your phone actually will mirror notifications between Windows and Android. So there are other apps that have done this for some time. But the interesting thing is this is a Microsoft app.
Wow.
Yeah. Also interesting, Microsoft has decided that a good way to solve the problem of people not knowing about all of the apps that they have for Android is to, when you install one app, to add a bunch of install icons to your share target menu.
That's
so if you install evil. your phone companion, you will get targets for OneDrive, for example, with little parentheses install that if you click, it will take you to the Play Store to download the app.
That's just evil.
Yeah. I think that that is exploiting a system that's supposed to... Now, I know that there was this discussion of improving the share target menu in Android Q. What I would really like is some sort of interface where I could turn off share targets enabled by apps that I don't want. You know, a target manager. Because if I look at the ones on my phone that are registered by various apps, half of them I never use. There are probably about five of them I use on a regular basis.
I don't have anything to add.
Okay. Firefox 68 apparently adds support for the web authentication API. And remember, Firefox for Android is not going to be doing any significant feature updates because they have the beta they're working on.
Mm-hmm.
So this may be one of the... This is actually the final feature update for the browser just to bring in this API. So everything else will just be security fixes until the new version comes out.
See...
I've never tried web authentication. I really should.
This is something that I've wanted to do for a while, and I don't know how to do it.
What?
Is I would like to have a key pair in my browser, and I can share the public half of it with websites, and then using that key, log into the websites, you know, kind of SSH-like.
That's certainly doable. Admittedly, that type of stuff is not an area that I'm an expert on. I've read a lot about authentication, but I haven't quite gotten everything down. I finally got OAuth down.
Well, apparently that's what this web authentication API is. It's asymmetric crypto.
Yeah, I just don't... I've read it, but I haven't really internalized it enough to speak intelligently about it.
Anyway, that's...
I actually want to. I think I need to read the spec a few more times. As I said, it took me a long time to really get OAuth down, and I think I got that one. I now know more about OAuth than I probably need to.
I'm sorry to hear that, because OAuth is not a fun spec.
You pick things up. Someday we can talk about Pixie.
I cannot talk about Pixie intelligently. Other than that's the nickname that we call our dog, our new dog.
No, her, PKCE.
Her name is Nyx, so we call her Nyxie the Pixie.
No, Pixie is an OAuth 2 extension, proof key for code exchange.
Ah.
That's RFC 7636, if you're keeping track. As I said, I've picked up some odd things that I'm not sure are going to come in handy again. I read a book. So Google promoted Night Sight to the main interface of its camera app. This is their night improvement, photo night improvement software.
Which is utterly miraculous.
Well, I was using it over the holiday weekend when I went into an abandoned building and was trying to take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
A building with no power and where apparently somebody stole the furnace and the water heater.
And you didn't want to use a flash?
I tried that too, but I figured it was a good opportunity to play with the new settings on my phone.
I agree. Night Sight is pretty impressive.
But it did inspire me to get one of those little lights that you can mount on the side of the phone. You know, like a... an external light.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to try that next time I'm in a dark abandoned building. By the way, don't go into dark abandoned buildings. This is also a good piece of advice that I wish I'd listened to myself on. Moving along, Google Fit has apparently been broken for months, and Google doesn't seem to be fixing it.
Really?
Clearly, I'm not fit enough to have noticed this. Because I have used Google Fit, but I have not checked. I have not logged into it in a while. I've just sort of assumed that it's tracking everything.
Yeah.
Because I press the button when I go for a walk, and then press the button again when I stop walking.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume somewhere it's logged, but I haven't really paid that much attention. We know that the website interface was shut down, but apparently I've missed that users have been complaining about the app itself. That activity tracking has stopped for many people.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
So I tend to use Samsung Fit. So, yeah.
But it is it is disappointing.
It is. I wonder if they're sunsetting it or if it's just broke.
Well, it should be an important thing for them because, again, being in that space is something they need to do. And I say need in the sense that because they are the steward of Android, they do need some sort of activity-based thing for phones.
And watches.
Yeah. Speaking of watches, as a sort of sidetrack, there is a new Mobvoi watch.
A Mobvoi?
Yeah, I was offered a coupon. Mobvoi, I remember, did the Tick Watch Pro.
Yes.
So they were sending me emails announcing their new one. Well, let's see if I have that email. Sorry, I should have had it open. The TicWatch Pro 4G LTE is now available and will be connected by Verizon in the future.
What's it called?
It's the TicWatch Pro 4G LTE.
Ah.
So you know about the Pro. This is the Pro.
Yes.
So it because I am subscribed, they offered me a $25 off coupon. Also, they're going to throw in a free Tick Home Mini, which is their portable Google Home device.
Mm-hmm.
So not counting the discount code, for the first 48 hours, let me just pull their website. I forgot to check the price on this thing. So customers will be able to activate the 4G LTE feature in early August. Until then, it can be used as a standard watch. And let's see, what is the list price for the... according to this, for the next 1 day, 12 hours, it's $279, not counting the $25 off coupon. So it's normal list price $398.99. So if I decide that I want a TicWatch Pro with this additional feature of 4G, I can get it, and they'll throw in a Tick Home Mini for $254.
Cool.
Not bad. Should I get a TicWatch Pro 4G LTE? Do I need a 4G LTE watch?
I would say, I mean, when you go and do exercise things, do you bring your phone with you?
Sometimes. But it's more that I've considered upgrading my watch for other reasons. So the question is this a watch worth buying? You like the TicWatch Pro.
I did like the TicWatch Pro.
And it has, according to their specs, it has, let's see, standalone phone calls and SMS texts. I can live without that, but Wear OS by Google. So I don't have to activate the 4G. 24-hour heart rate monitor, military-style durability, phone-free music streaming, 1 gigabyte of RAM, 2-day battery life, number sharing with mobile device, Google Assistant, Tick Pulse comprehensive heart rate analysis, swimming suitable, built-in GPS step tracking, 4G LTE, phone-free cloud sync notifications, Google Pay with NFC payments, 6 smart sports mode built-in, water-resistant speaker, 1,000-plus watch faces. I don't know. The only thing that, if I could activate the 4G LTE on Google Fi using a data-only plan, and it wasn't me having to pay Verizon for something, then that would be very tempting. The fact that I have to use Verizon is a little frustrating. Anyway, I'll contemplate whether or not I want to do that or not. Probably not, because I don't need 4G LTE, but we'll see.
My recommendation for a smartwatch is remaining with the Samsung Galaxy Wear right now.
Well, I still want an Android Wear watch. I don't want a Tizen one.
Bixby blows, but everything else rocks.
Still, I want to stay with the Android system in support of this podcast.
Okay.
So, moving along. And I could always wait a few more months to replace my watch. Let's see. The YouTube app is back on Fire TV, and Chromecast is now available in the Android Prime Video app.
So they got over their...
They kissed and made up.
Yeah, that. Cool.
I just find it amusing how long we were talking about Prime Video and Android. Remember the long period of time where there was no Prime Video app for Android? Now there was no Chromecast for Prime Video for Android, and now we got everything that we were complaining about we didn't have.
Yay! Yep.
So, Amazon has also confirmed that it may hold on to some Alexa data even if you delete audio files.
Ooh, isn't this bad?
Well, I'm predicting that this is going to be a continual discussion. As people get more concerned about privacy, people are going to start asking questions like this, finding out answers like this, and horrifying everybody. So they've made it so you can wipe audio files from your account, but they've outlined that they do hold on to anything related to ongoing information. So they may they don't hold on to the files themselves, but they may hold on to related information. They may hold on to information if you've set up a recurring alarm or something else, etc. So there, even if you delete the actual recordings, there are other bits of information that they have.
And I don't know if that's not okay.
Well, it's always a matter of what are your trade-offs for convenience.
Yep.
Moving along, apparently there is a crowdfunded portable cassette player with Bluetooth.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is the world's first Bluetooth 5.0 cassette player. And apparently, if you go onto Kickstarter, you can contribute to this item. And they've already gotten $63,016. And if you make a pledge... Wait a minute, are those Hong Kong or U.S. dollars? Oh, that's U.S. dollars. So this is a Hong Kong-based company. And apparently, you need 588 Hong Kong dollars, which is about $75, to get the Kickstarter special.
I think this is actually kind of cool. I have no use for this whatsoever. I don't own any cassette tapes.
I do, but I've kept one cassette player that if I ever want to get around to digitizing some of my old cassettes. And I'm not talking about the music, because I came to the conclusion a long time ago that I'll just repurchase it. It'll sound better if somebody who knows how to do sound engineering repurposes it other than me. You know, an actual professional redo. But there are some cassettes that I recorded myself. I have a recording here of an event that took place, what must have been 1996, 97. So that, I recorded it. I have the only copy of it. That I probably do want to make a digital copy of. So I've kept one cassette player in case I ever get around to doing that.
Does it still work?
Yeah. I think so.
Where is it?
It's here somewhere. Anyway, I probably should find those cassettes that are worth doing it and finally get rid of the ones that I've replaced. There's a project. Spend money in order to throw things out. A computer from NASA's Apollo program has been reprogrammed to mine Bitcoin. very, very slowly.
That's funny.
Well, I enjoy when people take things and repurpose them in amusing ways. So this is an Apollo guidance computer, which takes 10 seconds to compute a single hash value. So that would be, let's see. I'm trying to see if it actually has an estimate of how long it would actually take to do something here. Let's see. It was one of the first computers to use integrated circuits. It weighed only 70 pounds. Here we are. The computer is so slow that it would take a billion times the age of the universe to successfully mine a Bitcoin block.
How long?
A billion times the age of the universe.
Yep.
And the same individual also implemented Bitcoin mining on an old IBM 1401 computer from the mid-60s. And a 1970s Xerox Alto. So there apparently is no practical purpose to this other than amusement.
Well, keep in mind that all you need to... it's just running SHA-256 twice, or SHA-128 twice. So it's not like it's... I mean, cool. I think it's cool.
I'm not arguing the coolness of it. And finally, Wyze cams now have person detection. So they've incorporated the Exynor on-device AI. So this is... They've licensed, I'm guessing, third-party technology in order to do person detection.
On the camera.
Yes. So they're identifying when a person comes into the picture.
Cool.
So I have not yet enabled this on any of the cameras, but I probably will. The problem is any of them that I've enabled the RTSP functionality don't get this feature. That's compromising for you. But yep. I can do that on the Home Assistant side, because the same type of AI is available for integration in Home Assistant. That can now analyze the frames on my side. So, more work for me, but back to fun project. So that brings us to the end of this week's episode. We'll be back next week. Now, again, we'd like some feedback on our continual audio efforts. So remember, last week was a Zoom recording with a standard USB microphone as the only hardware on my side. This time, I'm back to using a digital mixing setup where two computers are being used, one for Jerry, one for myself, and then the recording is being done through one of the computers. So what Jerry hears is not the same audio that's being recorded. The audio for me is being recorded directly out of the microphone, and Jerry's output is being recorded directly out of the Chromebook.
Yay!
So we'll continue iterating on that to see, because I'm worried that this setup may be problematic because this is the recording on my side where people were saying the audio was speeding up and slowing down. So that may be the hardware that actually, the Behringer, the UMC 204 that actually digitizes all of the analog signals. So we'll narrow it down. And it will be perfect someday. But thank you for going on the journey with us.
Yay, it's a journey. A journey of discovery.
So until next week.
Bye, folks.